If you're tired of cycling through ineffective skincare trends and overcomplicated routines, then I'm excited to tell you about today's sponsor, OneSkin. Their products make it easy to keep your skin healthy while looking and feeling your best. No complicated routine, no multi-step protocols, just simple, scientifically validated solutions. The secret is OneSkin's proprietary OS01 peptide. It's the first ingredient proven to switch off the aging cells that cause lines, wrinkles, and thinning skin. And they've got several studies to back it up. I've been using their products for a while now, and I'm hooked. Get started today with 15% off using code RATCHET at oneskin.co. That's 15% off oneskin.co with code RATCHET. After you purchase, they'll ask where you heard about them. Please support our show and tell them we sent you. Support for today's episode comes from Honeylove. Honeylove has revolutionized the bra game. Say goodbye to underwire without sacrificing lift. Honeylove's bras feature supportive bonding that eliminates the need for uncomfortable wires. Plus, they're made with fabric that's so soft it feels like a second skin. You'll immediately feel and see the difference. Treat yourself to the best bras on the market and save 20% off at honeylove.com/ratchet. Use our exclusive link to get 20% off, honeylove.com/ratchet. After you purchase, they'll ask where you heard about them. Please support our show and tell them we sent you. Honeys, you deserve this.
Today's episode is brought to you by Angi. Angi has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs and projects done well. Let me tell you, there's the version of it where you try to do something at home, and then there's a version of it where you have someone help you, you watch them do it the right way, and you go, thank God I didn't try to do that myself. I have fully done things around the home that I think look good, and then a bang in the night, and I wake up to a shelf collapsing, a painting falling off the wall. Like, it, I've seen it all go south. I own a home, and I can tell you, I know how much work it can take. Whether it's everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now all you need to do is Angi that and find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Whatever your home project, big or small, indoor or outdoor, you can Angi that and connect with skilled professionals to get the project done well. Right now, one of my wish lists is I want a bike for my condo in Milwaukee, and I would love to rig it up on a pulley in the ceiling because I have one of those like lofted ceilings, but I'm so scared to try that on my own. Angi has 20 years of home experience and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angi app. Answer a few questions and Angi can handle the rest from start to finish or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of any home project in just a few taps. Because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angi that. Download the free Angi mobile app today or visit Angi.com. That's A-N-G-I.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, and those who don't identify as either, you are listening to Ratchet and Respectable. I wish I had more pep in my step today. One, I ain't sleep. And two, I just finished watching that Robin Roberts interview with Brittany Griner. I had to go get a giant bottle of water because I swore I dehydrated myself. I cried until my eyes were puffed up. Brittany Griner hasn't done an interview since she got back home from Russia after she was detained there for 10 months. She thanked Biden and the administration for getting her home, and she thanked the public for, you know, their love and support, and was like, okay, bye now, which no problem. But she's got a new book coming out about her story. It drops on Tuesday. And so the press for it is this big interview with Robin Roberts. It was actually a 2020 special. I watched it on Hulu. I don't know where else it's running. And then also she's got a cover story for New York Times Magazine. But we'll talk about that a little later. There's a couple of things I want to cover first. But I just wanted to mention it because I'm fresh off watching it and my emotions are all over the place. It's just such a sad, sad story. We all knew she went through a lot. I mean, she was sentenced for 9 years to a Russian penal colony in the middle of nowhere, and it was freezing. Nobody thought it was a walk in the park. American prison is bad. Overseas prisons, especially Russia, are notoriously bad. So no one thought it was a cakewalk for her, but just some of the details she went through. And we'll go through it. I took notes when I watched it, and I also took notes. Well, I tried to take notes when I was reading the magazine story, but I ended up copying and pasting, I want to say, half the article. It's really well written. It's just It's probably like 3,500 words. Every line of it is crazy, but we'll get to that. Wanted to give a couple updates. One of them is right when I finished last week's episode and I had to do a little add-on at the end, Kendrick Lamar had dropped his response to Drake's diss track. I said I didn't love it. I wasn't moved by it. 50 million people sent me various breakdowns that people were doing about this line meant this. The list of all the things he hated is actually a throwback to a DMX interview. It's called Euphoria because Drake's a producer on the show and the show is about teenagers and Drake likes underage girls. And I was like, yeah, I feel you. I feel you. It still don't work for me. Sonically, it doesn't sound good. Like the Chris Brown diss was gully and offensive and straight to the point. I didn't have to listen too hard to understand it. I sound like my mother right now. That's not the point. And also, it sounded good. Like I replayed it multiple times because it sounds good. Kendrick, it didn't do it for me. And I appreciate that it did it for other people. Their beef just doesn't do it for me. Like sonically, it's just not. I did see part of Kendrick's response. This came up in somebody else's beef. I can't remember who it was. But basically, you can't trust your team. There was some line about most of the people that are around you are just in it for the money or the status. They have no loyalty. Basically, you're surrounded by leeches. Is that Drake's fault? Like, he's not the one that's disloyal. It's like blaming Jesus for Brutus or blaming Caesar for Brute. Actually, the same thing. JC, Brutus, Brute, English major shit. Any character in the English language that has the initials JC, 9 times out of 10 is a Jesus allusion. Joan Clayton, girlfriends encountered. That's not the point. I'll go listen to the rest of it. I may or may not dissect it. Apparently, y'all really liked when I did the Chris Brown Quavo lyrics. Folks were like, this shit is dumb and hilarious. And I was like, I mean, if it's worthy. Also, another update. I recorded the episode on Tuesday. It went up on Wednesday. And I want to say on Wednesday, Essence announced one act that will be appearing at Essence Festival. Exactly 2 months from tomorrow, July 4th, is when Essence Festival kicks off. So one act has been announced. Typically, there are at least minimum 15 acts. Minimum. I'd actually say closer to 20 on the main stage. But Essence has announced one act, which is better than zero acts. The act is Birdman and Friends. 30 years of Cash Money Millionaires. I'm reading this on the Essence site. This is official. And so yay, we have an act for Essence Fest. Wonderful. Will they be announcing any of the other 14? Maybe tomorrow, because it'll officially be 2 months out. And then they'll just tell us everybody that's on the lineup all at once. Because it's 2 months out. I said it on the podcast. I got several calls. Two of them from people at Essence. One of them was like, girl, we don't know. Ma'am, I know you fucking lying. What do you mean you don't know? There's got to be other people signed that they're just not telling us, right? She said, I just told you it's Cash Money and that's it. I really genuinely thought she was playing. So I heard from people that work on the sponsor side. Apparently the sponsor side doesn't know much more either. I did hear strong possibility, but unconfirmed, Janet Jackson. And Janet is in fact on tour. So that would line up. Even if they get Janet, I'm like, okay, so now you have two acts. We're the other minimum 13. What are you doing? Please tell me my intel is wrong. I don't like to be wrong very often, but on this, I would like to be wrong. It would seem that something is, I'm choosing my words very carefully, amiss. It's ungood. I think those are the only updates I have. I think I could talk about TV for the rest of the episode. I started watching this show. And I talked about it on social media, but I also recognize that there's a bunch of people that just listen to the podcast, that don't tap into social media. And then also people who like the little blurbs I talk about on social media, because in my head, I've already talked about it. But people were like, no, we want to hear it on the podcast, like elaborate. I was like, I said all the important stuff. And they were like, no, that's fine. You can repeat it, just to say it again on the podcast. And I'm like, okay, y'all want me to talk about stuff I've written about? Like, fine, let's do it. Okay. I don't know how I got into this show. It's called The Never Mets. It's an own reality show. I was very surprised to see this kind of content on OWN because it's giving VH1 in the really bad years. And the concept of the show is couples, in this case, all Black folk, who met online but have never met in person. So they're going to meet each other literally for the very first time ever in their lives while the cameras are rolling for this production. So there's one couple. They've been dating for 12 years and they're exclusive. At least she is exclusive because they've been dating for 12 years. He has two children. One of the children, I want to say, is 13 or 14. And then the other child is 3. But they're in a monogamous relationship. And I was like, hey, something ain't right. They haven't fully addressed that on the show just yet. I saw a clip of it. And the woman was like, well, when it happened, when he got this lady pregnant, he didn't try to keep it from me. He was honest with me and lied to me. So I knew he was somebody I could trust. And I was like, so him having sex with someone else while y'all were supposed to be in an exclusive relationship, it had been like 8 years and change of a relationship and they never met. And they live in the same country, just to be clear. Everybody lives in the United States. I'm like, so when he actually cheated on you, that wasn't a sign you couldn't trust him. He was honest about being dishonest. So he's trustworthy. Okay, girl. The odd part, based on what's been shown in the first two episodes, they seem like the most stable couple. That should tell you something. There's another couple. They've been dating for 3 years and they both live in LA and have never met. And I was like, look, I know traffic is bad, but how y'all gonna live in the same city for 3 years and never meet? And when they met, actually had great chemistry. And I was like, even if you don't have a car, nobody could afford an Uber. Y'all couldn't meet at some midpoint location. Trying to make sense of shit that don't make no sense. Also, I think it's worthy of adding, all these people are grown people. So there's another couple, they ain't got no chemistry. And I think the gentleman may be a gay American. He's 27. He's the youngest person in the house. The range of people in the house, most people are in their mostly 30s, a couple early 40s. And then there's a gentleman who's 51. 27, other than I think he's gay and dating this woman, I think online when I described him, I called him immature. And I actually want to take that back. I don't think he's immature. I just think he's 27. He's dating this woman who's in her early 30s. She's either 31 or 32. In person, their chemistry just doesn't match. But I think they've only been dating 3 months, 6 months, not even a year. I mean, kind of okay. I'm like, it's a domestic flight. Why can't y'all just get on a plane? I understand everybody doesn't have flight money or ability to travel. Okay, if you also don't have the money to travel to meet this person that you are really into, maybe that's a sign that like you shouldn't do long distance. Like your funds ain't right to date the person that you want to date. Maybe you should date local instead. That's my thought process, but apparently not theirs. There's another couple. I think his name is Brandon. I can't remember the woman's name. I want to say the guy is like 39. He has an ex-wife. And then he also has a child with somebody else. I want to say the child is maybe 3 or 4. And then he had a kid with the ex-wife. I think the kid is like 16, 17, 18, something like that. So the woman he's dating is in her early 40s. Real cute lady. She doesn't have any children and she's never been married. And they've been dating, I want to say, for like 11 months. She lives Northeast. I want to say he lives in Miami. I'm like, y'all are good and grown people. Well, I don't understand why neither one of y'all could have got on a plane in all of this time. And even talking about it on the show, she was like, well, you know, like I want to build and I want to go forward. And she was like, I absolutely can get on a plane and we can meet. And I was like, but you didn't for the 11 months that you were dating him before this show came to you with this opportunity. Like, shit, why start now? Why did that happen in like the 11 months? I don't know what these people do for a living. 27-year-old, I'm like, maybe you honestly ain't got the funds. I just don't understand how people date for these really long periods of time and never meet. I say all the time, interested men act interested, but I also think it applies to people in general. If you really wanted to see someone, you would. I say all that to say, this couple, they're really bizarre. They're playing pool in the second episode. It's only 2 episodes available. I think the 3rd one comes out today. And their conversation is, he thinks that she's inconsistent. And she says, I've heard that before. You're not the first person to say it. He says, if I'm not the first person to say it, then it gives some validity to my point of view here. She feels hurt by this observation and is like, you're a bitch. And I was like, what? Like, I literally had to like rewind. And I was like, did something skip ahead that like warrants her calling him that? I don't feel like telling someone like you feel they're inconsistent or noting that their behavior is inconsistent. It's okay to call them a bitch from that. But she's like, you're a bitch. And then he's kind of like, I'm sorry, what? And then she repeats it. And she's like, yeah, you're a bitch. I called you a bitch. And then they start going back and forth. And she's like, well, how do you call me inconsistent? You divorced your ex-wife, so you lack loyalty. And he was like, I'm 39. The woman I was dating when I was 20 years old got pregnant. And we were young. We, you know, from the South, Christian upbringing, we were like, that's the right thing to do is to get married, to bring a child into wedlock. And clearly it didn't work. I got divorced at 21. I was like, are you really bringing up this man's divorce from 17 years ago? And then she starts harping on him having a kid. And she was like, well, yeah, you didn't stay with that woman either. So you're inconsistent and you lack loyalty. And I was like, you know what? If that's how you feel, if you feel that he lacks loyalty, if he's not capable of staying in a partnership, why are you here? Because it's not like this was information that came out after they met in person. He's like, well, I need to be honest with you about something. No, you knew this when you got on a plane to decide to participate in this show. Why are you here? And she was so, so nasty to him. And the thing that really got me is he didn't balk at it. And I was like, oh, you used to this shit. Either you used to it from her or somebody else used to do it to you and you think this shit is normal. Because she was like, you're a bitch. And like I said, I had to rewind because I was like, what did she just say? Why did she just say that? That's crazy. You don't talk to people like that. But she did. And he wasn't like, yo, fuck you. I'm out. Who the fuck are you talking to? Like it was normal. I was like, oh, you're a serial killer or you have like really low self-esteem. If you're tired of cycling through ineffective skincare trends and overcomplicated routines, then I'm excited to tell you about today's sponsor, OneSkin. Their products make it easy to keep your skin healthy while looking and feeling your best. No complicated routine, no multi-step protocols, just simple, scientifically validated solutions. The secret is OneSkin's proprietary OS01 peptide. It's the first ingredient proven to switch off the aging cells that cause lines, wrinkles, and thinning skin. And they've got several studies to back it up. I've been using their products for a while now, and I'm hooked. But don't just take my word for it. OneSkin has over 4,000 five-star reviews and were recognized by Fast Company as one of the most innovative brands in 2024. For a limited time, you'll get an exclusive 15% off your first OneSkin purchase using the code RATCHET when you check out at oneskin.co. Try OneSkin and enjoy younger, healthier skin without all the extra steps. OneSkin is the world's first skin longevity company. By focusing on the cellular aspects of aging, OneSkin keeps your skin looking and acting younger for longer. Get started today with 15% off using code RATCHET at oneskin.co. That's 15% off oneskin.co with code RATCHET. After you purchase, they'll ask where you heard about them. Please support our show and tell them we sent you. There's another couple. We've got three more to go. He's 51. And she's either 44 or 46. I can't remember how long they've been dating, but it's been a few years. Both Americans in America. While they were dating, he proposed to someone else. And she found out because he posted the ring on his Facebook page. And so on the show, they're reconnecting. And she says she's not sure if she's all in because they need to address what happened, by which she means him proposing to someone else while they were in a relationship. And he said, well, I had just given up hope on where we were going because, you know, we hadn't met and blah, blah, blah. So I was like, well, wait, you had money to buy a whole ring for another woman. So he had all this money to do that, but he never had money to get on a plane to go see you. Oh, and not even just to go see you, but to go meet you. So he was like, we good? And she was like, maybe. She's participating in the show. She's trying to make it work. And I was like, yo, sometimes folks do it to themselves. He clearly ain't shit. He bought another woman a whole ring while y'all were dating. And you still circling back. There's another couple. It's a Haitian girl. I don't know where the guy's from. She seems like a nice girl. She's a Christian woman. I want to say she's maybe 30. Real cute girl, nice disposition, seems to have a decent head on her shoulders. But she started dating this guy, and they're relatively new, like under 6 months. And she wants to get married, have a family, live a nice Christian life. He's one of those like kind of like red pill type guys. I think it's in the first episode. He's sitting around the table with the men. He was like, I meet women, but I never get too invested. You know, the woman that I'm here with, we're just dating and getting to know each other. We're not exclusive. He does this thing with women. He was like, I'll spend 3 or 4 days with them. And then I disappear for a while so they could think I'm not too interested, so they could chase me. The crazy part is the nice girl, the Haitian girl, hears him say this shit. She overhears him in the kitchen talking about her very dismissively. She hears him talk about the terrible way that he treats women. And she confronts him about it the next day. And then he pretends like the whole conversation that she heard didn't happen. And then the next day they do this exercise where they're practicing these Kama Sutra positions, and it's supposed to be about like building intimacy or something. And he says to her that he could see himself moving forward with her and going to the next level. And I'm like, based on what? The day before, you're explaining that you're in these streets. She doesn't seem like a stupid girl. And I appreciate that she called him out and questioned him, even though she let it drop because he was gaslighting her essentially. And she likes him. And so she wants to have faith in him. But I was like, he's a red flag. I think she just needs to see a little bit more from him and be like, okay, this ain't it. Last but not least, I don't remember how long these people were dating. I want to say it was a few years though. My friend sent me this long text about the show, and she called the woman chocolate titties and fighting tattoos. And I knew exactly what she was talking about. The woman is very shapely. The guy accused her of having work done. And I was like, did she? If it's work, it's great work. Who's the surgeon? Which brings up another question. They've been dating, let's say at least a year. I think it might have been closer to 2 or 3 though. You have money to get your titties and your ass done, but you ain't have money to get on a flight to go meet this man that you're like, whatever, so in love with. And they're also grown people. She was minimum 30. She had a couple kids. He has a couple kids. Her initial conflict was he wants more children and that's not what I want. Okay. I thought their conflict was going to be over the children issue, but this chick is bad. Cute girl. She's got an amazing shape. She walks up and they're going to do yoga. They never met before ever in life. And he decided that they should do yoga. Not like a yoga class, not like a yoga instructor, but basically put down a yoga mat. The yoga that they did was basically like twister positions that were highly sexual. I was like, sir, downward facing dog means both of y'all do downward facing dog. Not she does downward facing dog. And then you get behind her and start humping her. She's doing yoga. You're being a perv. She walks up. She got a full spandex outfit on. He says, she don't really look like she did in pictures. I'm not attracted. Huh? They showed the pictures that she had been sending and posting. She was photoshopping not just her waist, but her hips and legs to make them much smaller. So she's kind of built like, think like Pamela Anderson maybe, versus when she showed up in person and she's built like a brick house. She's a very hourglass shaped woman. Well-proportioned, not big in the waist, but wide in the hips, got a big old ass. What seems to be the problem? But you know what? Everybody likes different things. So he says that he's not attracted. I'm looking at her and I'm looking at him and I'm looking at her and I'm looking at him. And I'm like, bro, that's really the best you're going to get. He wasn't a bad looking man, but he wasn't a good looking man. She was a bit out of his league, I think. But she's very attracted to him. And he says that he likes her personality. He's warming up to her. And so he could, you know, find some attraction for her again because he likes her disposition. And I was like, okay. They seem to be doing all right until all the couples get together in a group. So one of the guys comes downstairs and he has on some short shorts. The shapely girl, it keeps saying, those are Hoochie Daddy shorts. And I think she's just being silly. It didn't strike me as inappropriate or offensive, but the guy was really sensitive about it. And he was like, yo, like you in here flirting with this other man, like right in my face. And she was like, flirting with who? Who am I flirting with? And he was like, you know, you're over there talking about his shorts are short. And like, she wasn't really complimenting him. Like, she kept joking about his shorts, but she wasn't like, ooh, your legs are looking good in your hoochie daddy shorts, and your ass is looking fat in your hoochie daddy shorts. Or like, I can see your print in your hoochie daddy shorts. Like, she just kept making fun of the shorts being, you know, short shorts on a man. But the guy feels a way about it. And he was like, well, okay, if it's okay for you to talk about, you know, this man's shorts. He was like, well, then I'm gonna talk about so-and-so's ass. And she was like, wait, like, how did we get here? Like, you're doing the most right now. So they start tussling, and it seems like they're playing. And then it escalates into where, like, he pushes her, and she's like, what the fuck? But, and then he's like all in her face, like he's about to fight her. She hits him because she's like, what the fuck? And then he like swings back on her. And I was like, yo, you doing all this, pushing and tussling and grabbing and tossing a woman on camera with other people in the house? The fuck? And I was like, oh yeah, he beats the brakes off women. Absolutely. And as many people pointed out, they were like, yo, they weren't in the kitchen by themselves. Like, there were other people in the kitchen, other men in the kitchen, and nobody jumped in. And so the second time he laid hands on her, and then they were like, hey, production came out way late. Production is sitting there watching everything off camera. I was like, there's at least two camera people there, most likely men. Just knowing reality TV intimately, at least two to three other production people standing around. And nobody intervened with this man laying hands on this woman. All y'all trifling. But yeah, that's episode one and episode two. This show is absolutely a complete and utter shit show. I'll be watching weekly. This is terrible. This is the train wreck. What happens next? We need a good dating show. Because I only recap The Bachelor when it's Black people. And ain't been nobody Black in a while, to my knowledge. Support for today's episode comes from Honey Love. Honey Love has revolutionized the bra game. Say goodbye to underwire without sacrificing lift. Honey Love's bras feature supportive bonding that eliminates the need for uncomfortable wires. Plus, they're made with fabric that's so soft, it feels like a second skin. You'll immediately feel and see the difference. I love my Honey Love bras. It's so comfortable, I've made it my go-to. This bra gives all the support of traditional bras without using underwires. Plus, mesh detailing adds a touch of sexy. And if you're tired of bras that cause bulging in the back, Honey Love's bras are designed with back-smoothing fabric to prevent bra bulge. It's time to spring clean your bra drawer. For a limited time only, you can get Honey Love on sale. Get 20% off your entire order with our exclusive link, honeylove.com/ratchet. Support our show and check them out at honeylove.com/ratchet. Treat yourself to the best bras on the market and save 20% off at honeylove.com/ratchet. Use our exclusive link to get 20% off, honeylove.com/ratchet. After you purchase, they'll ask where you heard about them. Please support our show and tell them we sent you. Honeys, you deserve this.
Today's episode is brought to you by Angie. Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs and projects done well. Let me tell you, there's the version of it where you try to do something at home, and then there's a version of it where you have someone help you, you watch them do it the right way, and you go, thank God I didn't try to do that myself. I have fully done things around the home that I think look good, and then a bang in the night, and I wake up to a shelf collapsing, a painting falling off the wall. Like, I've seen it all go south. I own a home, and I can tell you, I know how much work it can take. Whether it's everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now all you need to do is Angie that and find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Whatever your home project, big or small, indoor or outdoor, you can Angie that and connect with skilled professionals to get the project done well. Right now, one of my wish lists is I want a bike for my condo in Milwaukee, and I would love to rig it up on a pulley in the ceiling because I have one of those like lofted ceilings, but I'm so scared to try that on my own. Angie has 20 years of home experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app. Answer a few questions and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish, or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly. which means you can take care of any home project in just a few taps. Because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I.com.
This Brittany Griner interview, I told you earlier, it took me clean out. I cried and cried and cried. Brittany cried. The interview is very vulnerable, and we'll get into the details of it. But she's an incredibly strong woman. Because the stuff she detailed, I was like, oh no, I wouldn't survive. Mm-mm. Everyone knew it was hell. I had no idea it was this. What she described, I couldn't even fathom. All right, so let's get into this. It's a Robin Roberts special. It's called Prisoner in Russia. It's currently airing on Hulu. That's why I watched it. I don't know where else it's available. But this is Brittany's first sit down since she got back. She has a book dropping on Tuesday. And so she sat down with Robin Roberts for her first TV interview, probably her only. And I want it to be her only. She's better than she was when she got back home, but she has a significant amount of healing to do. She carries an extraordinary amount of self-blame, and she takes full accountability. She says, even though it was an accident, I didn't intend to carry the cartridges over there. She says the day that she left, February 15th, which I think is notable, is the day after Valentine's Day. She had to get back to Russia, but she stayed until the 15th to spend Valentine's Day with her wife. But she says she woke up late the next morning. She was rushing to get to the airport. She almost missed her flight. And she said she just threw all her stuff in a bag and rolled out. And she didn't realize that she had, it was reported at the time, I think one cartridge, but two vape cartridges with cannabis oil in her bag. There was one in her big bags and there was another one in her carry-on. It was less than a gram. I want to say it was 0.7 grams was the total for the two cartridges. Like, this is just a little bit of weed. She also made a note and she was like, you know, weed is legal in Arizona where she was flying from. She also said she had a medical card to partake that she was vaping for pain management. And she said that, you know, I have all of these issues because I've been playing basketball year round for 7 years. Like, she plays for the WNBA. And then she'd also been playing overseas in Russia. I want to say 7 years. She made around $200,000 playing for the WNBA. And then she was making over $1 million USD when she was in Russia. So that's why she kept going over there. I believe her when she says it was a mistake. I don't think anybody, especially Black and woman, in their right mind, we know Brittany Griner not to be perfect. We don't know Brittany Griner to be crazy. I can't see any Black woman in her right mind knowingly carrying weed into Russia. I've never been to Russia and know Russia don't play. She had been there playing for around 7 years. She knew what Russia's laws were. That doesn't make any sense. She had an idea, surely, of what Russia's prisons were. I don't think she did it intentionally. But when she talks about herself, she takes this accountability, but she also says the worst part of all of this for her was that she ruined her family name. And I'm like, baby, you didn't kill anybody. You had some leftover weed in your bag. It wasn't even leftover crack, sweetie. It was weed. You made a mistake. A relatively harmless mistake, and a mistake that wouldn't have escalated the way that it did had it been another country, or had that country not gone to war in the middle of your situation. There's a lot of factors at play here. It's a really beautiful interview. It's one of Robin's best. And I reached out to her producer earlier and I was like, sis, this is some of y'all good, good work. One thing that I really like about Robin's interview is that she painted a picture of Brittany before all of this. And not just as a basketball player, but as a person. She talks about Brittany as a young woman, about Brittany's physical development. And Brittany is 6'9 now. She is masculine presenting, I would say. She says throughout her life, she was always looked at as androgynous or even male. By the time she was a teenager, she was towering over all her classmates. She talks about her family was concerned about her physical appearance. They took her to a bunch of doctors to the point that she was like, can we stop? Because I feel like a lab rat. And she found solace in basketball. She happens to be very, very tall. She also happens to be very, very coordinated and also very, very good at the sports. So she takes the basketball. Pre-Russia, Brittany was a two-time Olympic champion, and she'd been on the All-Star team 9 times. With Russia, she had not wanted to go back. I think the time all this happened, she was probably 31. She's been playing basketball hardcore for, what? She said she didn't start playing until she was around 15 or so. So 15 years. At the time that she goes to Russia, she's recently married. Under 2 years, I think, they're a pretty fresh couple. She gets to this airport. They find the drugs. She is detained. They take her passport. They take her boarding pass. I want to say she was in Moscow and she had a connecting flight to a smaller town where her basketball team was located. The Russian authorities put her in a, she said it's a 7x7 cell. She's 6'9". Her wingspan, I think I read earlier, is 7'1". She's in the cell that she can't even extend her arms full way. She says in this cell, it's just her and a hole in the ground where she could do her business. They let her keep some of her stuff. She describes later that she tore up some of her t-shirts to use it to wipe her ass after she shit in this hole in the ground that was supposed to be a toilet. Dogs are treated better. Jesus. She gets transferred. I think she was in the equivalent of a jail, and they transferred her to a prison after Russia invades Ukraine. And she says it's a group cell. They give her one roll of toilet paper per month, which I was like, I go through one entire roll of toilet paper every week. More if I'm on my cycle. And that's in addition to the wet wipes. And then she said sometimes there were no supplies for 2 or 3 months. So there was no toilet paper. She says they gave them toothpaste. The toothpaste was literally 15 years old. They would use the 15-year-old toothpaste on the wall to cover the mold. She said the women were forced to go outside for recreation or recess for 15 minutes every day. She said sometimes their guards would make them go outside during a blizzard. And even though they were only supposed to be out there for 15 minutes, which is bad enough in a blizzard, sometimes they'd be left out there for 2 hours. And they'd be yelling and screaming and begging to be let back in. And the guards were just like, fuck it. This is the point where she starts talking about suicide, which, yeah, I could see that. They don't talk about it in the TV interview, but in the New York Times Magazine, they talk about the way she was chained up when she was in the courtroom. So they would chain her hands together in the cuffs, and then that cuff would be chained to the guard. She was like, I was leashed to another person. I felt like a dog. She said the dehumanization is what was really getting to her. She also talks about how when she was in, I don't know if this is in the first place. She talks about how the guards would come in and gawk at her. They would open up the little slit through the door and they would come and like peek in and like look at her and observe her like she was an animal. She talked several times about the guards or various other people trying to get glimpses of her body. She said she was coming from the shower once at the other prison and a guard stopped her and used their, I guess, baton is the word, to like move her towel out the way because they wanted to see her chest. At one point, she was put in a male prison. And when they checked her in, this is right before she got out of the country, they stripped her down in front of a bunch of men. And they made her turn in circles while they filmed and took pictures of parts of her body. We knew it was bad. Never in the wildest did I think it was that. I don't know if this is in the Robin interview. I think this is also New York Magazine. She said she gave up hope, trying to be hopeful with the idea that she would get out of there. She said at one point it was doing more harm than good. So she just gave up. She wrote a letter. Oh, God. You can tell the shit that triggers me. She wrote a letter to her father apologizing for embarrassing the family name and for disappointing him. Which, again, I was like, baby, your mind is playing tricks on you. Her father wrote back and was like, I love you and you're my daughter. Like, basically, we good. She wrote to Sherelle. I've been calling this woman Cheryl Sherelle forever and a day. It's a running joke on the podcast, but the wife's name is Sherelle. We're not going to start calling her a new name. That's her name on the podcast. It's said with love. But she wrote to Cheryl Sherelle and she said, Jesus. She said it was unrealistic to expect her wife to wait 9 years for her to get out of Russian prison camp. And so she wrote her a letter and said, if you need to divorce me and move on with your life, like, I don't want to hold you, but please, could we still be friends? And could you write me from time to time? That baby was down bad. And obviously Sherelle writes back like, I'm your wife. I'm not going anywhere. I'm gonna get you home. I say all the time, and I think I said it within the last couple of weeks because I knew this interview was coming and I was excited about it. I was like, if you don't love me, like Sherelle loves Brittany, what are we doing? Why are we here? What is our purpose? It's not real love. Love me like Sherelle loves Brittany. Oh, and apparently like Brittany loves Sherelle. Like to write a letter to somebody to be like, I love you enough to be like, I'm in this fucked up situation of my own doing. I don't want you to waste your life waiting on me. I want you to live full and have the life of your dreams, even if it's not with me. It's a different kind of love than Sherelle. I'll take that kind of love too. They got a real epic love story going on over there.
Another day is here and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
So Brittany's over there in total for 10 months or so. And then she gets a letter saying that the U.S. is going to bring her home. She had heard that the State Department was in talks trying to get her and another American that the Russians had had for a while, Paul Whelan, that they were trying to get both of them home. The GMA includes an interview from someone at the State Department, and they said, we were trying to get both of them home. Russia said only Brittany. They wouldn't even consider Paul. She met him. She remembers how soft his hands were. She said she read later that he'd been painting pictures of cats while he was in prison. She was doing, I mean, it's a work colony, but she was doing work. She was cutting up fabric for Russia's military uniforms, and they had her working 12 to 15 hours a day. She said when she got home, first thing she did, she went to Whataburger. And then she got some barbecue and she got some hot Cheetos and a Dr. Pepper. It's so weird, the stuff that you miss when you're gone. I guess out of curiosity, she decided to Google to see what people were saying about her. She saw people saying all sorts of racist things, all sorts of homophobic things. They're still saying that. I was on Twitter, X, whatever it's called, earlier, and the commentary about her was, a lot of people feel like America should have left their black ass over there. And I was like, you know, this is an American, right? If you have an opportunity to bring an American home, you bring their ass home. But they don't see her as American. She didn't talk about it in the GMA interview. I wonder if it comes up in the book, though. Black Americans, just the general observation, don't tend to feel American until they leave America. We don't get the full privilege of being an American because of our race. Until you go overseas and everybody's like, oh, blue passport, American accent, paid in USD. Oh, you must got money. I mean, not in the UK because their currency is higher. And then not in Dubai because their currency is higher. Not in places where the currency is higher. But when our currency is higher, then people are like, oh, you got money. Not Japan, because I think Japan thinks of us as like a discount mark. I wonder if that comes up for Brittany in the book. The New York Magazine piece talks about how one of the lingering effects of her ordeal is she doesn't want to travel outside the country. She's just afraid, which I think for good reason, that her freedom could be snatched away. She did, however, say she's making an exception to go to the Paris Olympics. She very much wants to represent her country again. She spoke several times with Robin about her pride in being an American. And I got the sense that she, like I say, most Black people in America didn't feel that until America brought her Black ass home. Remember Michelle Obama? Like early on in Barack Obama's first campaign, she gave some speech about this is the first time that she felt like American. White people were all up in arms about how she was unpatriotic and how could she say that? And Black people were like, yeah, okay, like, what's the issue? Like, did she lie? Did she say something that everybody don't think? It was a really good interview. I thought Brittany came across as sympathetic, for sure. Very honest, uncomfortably so at some points. Very vulnerable. I think she did a really good job as presenting herself as human, flaws and all. It was a really strong interview. Like, this book drops on Tuesday, even though, like, I've watched this interview and I've read this New York Times piece. I still want to go buy the book and read it immediately. I'm really curious to know more, but also I really just want to support her. This is a Black woman. She got a bad deal. It's something about her. I haven't quite put my finger on exactly what it is yet, but it triggers my protection instinct. I'm pulling up my notes right now for the New York Magazine piece. I want to see if there's anything else that I didn't mention because my notes are on two separate pages. I didn't integrate them. Oh, one of the ways that she coped when she was overseas, one was the Bible. And then the other one was she started chain smoking. She was smoking a pack a day, which that baby was stressed. She said when she got back home, she couldn't play horse because her lung capacity was so shot from smoking cigarettes. She said when she got back, she jumped in the plane thinking her routine and familiarity would ground her back in life. And she went back to the WNBA, which is a year-long contract, but she went back and she said the transition was rocky. All season, she was plagued by injuries and insecurities and her confidence had evaporated. It got so bad that she took a mid-season leave. I didn't know that. But she does feel like she got her body back now. She told New York Times, she says, quote, I actually feel like my old self. I'm moving like my old self. But still, in the back of my head, there's a nagging what if, you know, what if it doesn't go the way that you want it to? She said when she was in Russia, she would journal in the margins of her Bible and a Sudoku book. But the details are seared in her mind. She said while she was in jail or prison, she says she was subjected to a psychiatric evaluation. In Russia, homosexuality is often called a mental illness, and Griner worried that she could be institutionalized. She was asked about her, quote, sick thoughts and drug problem and pressed to admit she was guilty. She says in the prison, herpes and HIV were rampant, and one of the women who spoke English, this was at the first prison, she recommended to Brittany that she should avoid medical exams if she could. She said at one point she got a severe eye infection and urgently needed medical care. She found out later that the person who treated her was a veterinarian. Jesus. She says prison in Russia, and again, I'm reading this from New York Times. It says prison in Russia reopened old wounds. Memories of her adolescent body as an object of fascination. Guards heckled her, made lewd jokes, asked about her genitalia. She says after she was found guilty, this, I think this was November 2022, she says she was loaded onto a train with other female inmates. After 7 or 8 days of traveling in cages in the dark, they finally stopped and were met with guards with automatic weapons and barking German shepherds. She had been taken to a repurposed Soviet-era gulag in Mordovia. 200 inmates referred to the region as, quote, the ass of Russia. For several days, no one in her family or her legal team knew where she was. In the first prison, she had a friend who was fluent in English. In this new prison, no one spoke English, and she doesn't speak Russian, so she couldn't communicate. And she noted at one point, almost no one spoke English. and she began to lose fluency. Oh my God. And I've read this before. I boohooed all the way through it. Every sentence is just one big what the fuck after the next. The idea of being a fluent English speaker and being so isolated and so traumatized that you forget English. She celebrated Thanksgiving alone with a smoked turkey leg and rice with soy sauce that she bought from the commissaire. This poor, poor woman. Fast forward ahead. She said she got back and she tried to throw herself back into basketball. She said she tired easily because of the chain smoking prison had shredded her lungs. And said she decided to see if she could still dunk, and she could. She said, but her back ached for days after. She said trying to do her standard exercises was a no-go. Her lifelong struggles with her body image resurfaced. There were days where she wouldn't eat. She said before she was in prison, she and Sherelle liked to spend lazy Sundays in bed watching TV and laughing. But being in a single room with a bed reminds her too much of prison. So does being cold. She has nightmares that she has to go back to Russia to file some errant paperwork and becomes trapped all over again. She said between seasons, she and Sherelle used to venture down to Mexico. Now she's afraid that she could be a valuable target for another hostage situation. She says, if I go to the wrong country, they could literally just grab me. Therapy has taught her that there is no quote and unquote before anymore. Her brain is different and so is her life. She said one of the biggest signs that she's recovering is that her words are back. She said when she first got home, she felt and sounded like a child. This is the last part I'm going to read. And I just want you to know, like I'm giving you these details. There's so much more in the article. I highly recommend you read it. It's really well written too. The writer observes, during our meetings, Griner was raw and unguarded, willing to go as deep as the conversation required, but it hasn't been easy or comfortable navigating her emotions in the public sphere. She says, because of her size, people often don't always see her fragility. She says, quote, there's no room for tears as women. If we have a moment, it's like, oh, she's weak, being bitchy or irrational. We don't get to process. We have to be on 24/7. The writer observed, it's clear that Brittany continues to struggle with the feeling that her freedom is conditional and not something she inherently deserves. She gonna be okay. It's just gonna take a while. She not there yet. I'm glad she's doing the book. I'm glad she's telling her story. I hope that the two interviews, Robin, and then this one as well. I hope that that's all she needs for this book. I don't want her out here in the public rehashing this over and over and over. There's a great Jay-Z quote where he talks about my pain, your entertainment. I thank her for sharing her story. I don't think that the interview that she did with Robin nor this piece, I don't see it as entertainment. I see it as being informed. I see it as, you know, she knows there's a whole bunch of people that pray for her black ass. I feel like this book is for them. I hope that she knows that she has as many, if not more, supporters than she has detractors. I hope the support for her, the sympathy for her, can be as loud as the hate. I hope that she knows. And she said she hurt black women. She acknowledged the support of black women in her book. But I'm like, we were there, sis, and we still here. We still rooting for you. And we still praying for you. And we know Cheryl Sherelle got you. You came home. We left the light on. It's still on. Just continue to work on you. Okay. That's the episode. I just want to go have another big fat cry right now. This never should have happened to her. Oh, this poor, poor, poor woman. And thank God for Cheryl Sherelle. She don't give enough credit. All right, I'm going to cry. We'll talk on Tuesday. Bye.
Today's episode is brought to you by Angie. Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs and projects done well. Let me tell you, there's the version of it where you try to do something at home, and then there's a version of it where you have someone help you, you watch them do it the right way, and you go, thank God I didn't try to do that myself. I have fully done things around the home that I think look good, and then a bang in the night and I wake up to a shelf collapsing, a painting falling off the wall. Like it, I've seen it all go south. I own a home and I can tell you, I know how much work it can take. Whether it's everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now all you need to do is Angie that and find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Whatever your home project, big or small, indoor or outdoor, you can Angie that and connect with skilled professionals to get the project done well. Right now, one of my wish lists is I want a bike for my condo in Milwaukee, and I would love to rig it up on a pulley in the ceiling because I have one of those like lofted ceilings, but I'm so scared to try that on my own. Angie has 20 years of home experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app. Answer a few questions and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish, or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of any home project in just a few taps. Because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I.com.